right here from KCNR. You're listening to Common Ground Radio, your progressive radio show. And it's a call-in show, folks, so you can call in. And we will take your calls. And I'm here with RV. RV, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, Christian. How are you?
Not too bad. Hey, we've got a pretty good show going on today. We've got Dr. Sean Schrawler. Once again, he was with us last weekend, and he's going to break down critical race theory for us. So, you know, folks, well, I don't know. What do you think, RV? There's a lot of confusion and lies and false information floating around on what we call CTR. What do you think?
Well, I think today we're going to try to take a real good look about critical race theory and how it applies directly to our situation here in Shasta County, and that's in regard to the recall movement. And I think one way we could start the conversation is I really like the Wikipedia definition of critical race theory, which is an academic discipline that started in the late 70s, and so it's been around for about 40 years. It's not taught in high schools, and but the basic, there's like two tenets of critical race theory. First, that race is a social construct, based on social constructs and cultural assumptions. And the second part of that is the idea that these cultural assumptions and social constructs can be changed for the better.
Right.
I think right now what's happening with this discussion that's going on with critical race theory is we're not talking about how this can change things for the better.
Well, and we're going to dive deep into it. Dr. Schaller is going to join us here pretty quick. And by the way, it is called Common Ground, and folks, we do have common ground. I mean, and I'm going to say common ground is when a majority of Americans come together on an issue and support issues or don't support issues. And that kind of leads me into this. This is I get a kick out of this. Fox News, you know, they do polling, and sometimes I wonder kind of if they're accurate or not, but you know what? They got President Biden's approval rating currently at 56%. That's on Fox News. That's not on Mother Jones. That's not on NBC or any of the other, quote, fake news outlets. Of course, the alt-right, you know, they don't like Fox News too much anymore either.
Compared to the last president that never got over 45.
That's right. The last president would have dreamed about a 56% rating. And also, you know, this is kind of surprising in that a poll was done recently, and it was a morning consult poll. And they did a little bit of polling on Republicans. This is last week. And, you know, so I'm going to cut to the bottom line here. The majority of Americans believe President Biden is the president. He was put in power legitimately, and there was no fraud. However, if we're talking about Republicans, they continue to push the big lie. In fact, Trump did last week when he once again called the election rigged. And 86% of Republican voters said that Trump's challenges were appropriate. 80% said they were not confident in the national vote tally, and 68% said Trump really won.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, this is, you know, I can't call it delusional, because that, you know.
They're being reinforced by the alt-right media all the time.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, but you're diving into separation of reality. How do you suspend disbelief to a degree where you can believe in that nonsense, which is also contributing to critical race theory? I liked Nathan. Nathan put up a little Facebook thing today, and he calls
Nathan Blaze.
Blaze. That's right, and he calls this stuff tinfoil hat politics. In other words, folks. It's going to get to a point where we have to put our tinfoil hat on and protect ourselves from the weird cosmic rays that are, you know, infecting us. So anyway, this gets into the fact that the majority of people, as well as the majority of courts, I think it was, what, 59 or 60 court cases. Thank you very much, Rudy Giuliani, who just lost his law license. And four Supreme Court rulings. When's this stuff going to end? You know, I mean, what kind of medication is available to deal with this?
I don't know. It's very disturbing because it's, you know, it's obviously made up. I mean, it's literally fake news. And, but it's not stopping. I mean, one thing I noticed is even in the mainstream news now, for like a couple of months there was not as much Trump. Now all of a sudden Trump's in the news all the time. Yeah. It's like they're addicted to this guy because he gets eyeballs on the TV set.
I think addiction is right. I think it lights up certain neurological processes in our brain. We've become addicted to it like I'm addicted to coffee. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and that one news outlet, America News, what is it?
One America News.
Yeah, One America News. Yeah. Did you see... And these are the folks that are running the Arizona recount or whatever they're doing.
Somebody associated with that thing is involved with the recount.
That's right. Yeah. And the guy comes on a couple of days ago and he says, you know, people like me need to be executed. And he'd be taken out. This is where this stuff gets dangerous. This is where the tinfoil hat politics gets really dangerous because there are some nut jobs out there. Who have guns and who have demonstrated the will to use them because they believe that, Trump won the election, so we're going to go ahead and storm the United States of America's Capitol and try to halt the Electoral College vote so that Trump can be reinstalled as the rightful. Nonsense, people. Nonsense. You know, I mean, the water here in Reading is questionable, but it's we don't have drugs in it that are...
Trump supporters got mad at him because he announced that he was going to be doing some rallies in October and November, and they said, well, wait a minute, aren't you going to be reinstated in August?
Yeah, that's what he kept saying. You know, I fully expect to be reinstated in August. So, anyway, Anyway, we've got Dr. Sean Schwaller with us, and he was with us last week. And Dr. Schwaller is a instructor down at Chico State University and has dived deep into racial and minority and gender studies. And Dr. Schwaller is going to be able to give us some insight due to the fact that half of Americans polled don't know what critical race theory is. So, my goodness, Dr. Schwaller, are you with us today?
Good morning. Hello.
Good morning.
Hi, Professor.
Yeah,
thank you for having me again.
Oh, man, thank you for being here. And can we call you Sean? Or?
Absolutely, yes. I prefer to be called Sean.
Okay, there we go. So... You know what? What do you think about this tinfoil hat prognosis, if you will, or diagnosis? Do you find it disturbing that we're able to disassociate or suspend disbelief to a point where people are starting to believe in this stuff?
And which stuff were you referring to again?
I'm talking about like Jewish space laser starting fire. I'm talking about, next I expect Marjorie Greene to come out and blame Antifa for raising the Surfside condos down in Florida or something like that. I mean, where people are unhinged in their thinking and reality. And to a point where they call critical race theory names that aren't even, they're not real. I mean, number one, it's not even taught in public schools. That's what the research I've done is, no, it's not taught in K-12 schools. In fact, Dr. Schwaller, what is critical race theory? Just real quick.
Well, and actually, I'll answer that, but I want to back up. I was just reading the America First Caucus policy platform published by, that was pushed forward with, by Marjorie Taylor Greene, and there's a section in there on education. But to go back to what you were talking about, there really are people that believe that, for example, the fires were started by, you know, devices in the air that are shooting laser beams and, you know, chemtrails. And it's hard to believe until you meet or know somebody that believes those things and you see how seriously they are invested in it and believe it. And then you believe that they believe it, even though you don't believe it yourself. But it's hard to believe, but people really do believe in these things.
Yeah, you know, Dr. Schwaller, before we dive deep, we've got an example, a local example of extremism and facts that are being twisted and construed. And RV brought this in, and I think if we could spend just a couple of minutes on this real quick. RV, go ahead and tell us about this.
Okay, I don't know if Sean heard me at the top of the hour, but I wanted to start out with the Wikipedia definition for critical race theory, which is an academic discipline that started in the late 70s, and that sees race is based on social constructs and cultural assumptions. That's one facet of it. The other facet of it in the Wikipedia definition is that we're supposed to be able to do something. The theory says we're supposed to be able to do something to change things for the better. So I'm sort of I'm always looking for bad pieces of writing, and this happened to come across my desk. It's from a recall supporter who I won't name because I didn't originally. I thought that this person had wrote it. Then I did a little Google search and found out this is something that was blasted all over the country right before the election last year. So I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm going to read the parts that mention race in a 200-word rant. Racism is mentioned 10 times. So I will read. I used to think I was pretty much just a regular person. But I was born white into a two-parent household, which now labels me as privileged, racist, and responsible for slavery. Where's the next race?
RV, if you could back off the microphone just a little
bit.
There we go. Yeah. Perfect.
I'm proud of our flag, what it stands for, and the many who died to let it fly. So I stand and salute during our national anthem. So I must be a racist. I kneel only for God, which makes me a racist. I'm labeled racist when thinking the erasing of history will potentially cause us to repeat the problems. I think that all lives matter, which labels me as racist. I support President Trump, which labels me as racist. I think that riots and destruction of property around our country is wrong and is just an excuse to push a political agenda, so I'm labeled a racist. I support President Trump. Oops, sorry, I reread that. I support our cops, which labels me as a racist. I vote for the Republican Party because it best represents my conservative views, which labels me as a racist. And it goes on in that same vein.
Yes.
So, this is a person that's not saying they're a racist. They're saying they are. I mean, this is very interesting. What's going on here?
Well, to me, it sounds like, and I read, you know, what you're referring to,
right,
and you had sent it to me, but it sounds like if you say all those things in that way on social media, you sound like a racist. And I hate to say that because, you know, it comes off that way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my number one note that I took was basically that it was the paranoid, racist, homophobic, and xenophobic mind of a right-wing recall supporter. And, you know, I don't hear anything about supporting people of color. I hear homophobic comments about having to go to the bathroom of your birth sex in that
right.
Statement. There's another comment about that. The idea that you are, that you're heterosexual, so you must be homophobic. I mean, that is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard.
Right.
And it just goes on and on and on. And it also is this bigger, I'm the victim. There's a lot of victim up there in that comment. And that reminds me of, you know, the responses to critical race theory as well. There's a whole lot of grievances,
mm-hmm,
with folks that are either, you know, in the recall movement or against critical race theory. There's a whole lot of victims up in there, and it's really a false sense of victimhood that these folks are expressing.
One thing that's interesting as far as Northern California is concerned is our percentage of African Americans in the population is really low, and it's like 1% in Shasta County. So if these people are victimized, they obviously haven't been victimized by African Americans. Who have they been victimized by?
Well, like, yeah, exactly. When people say they want to take their country back, like, take it back from what?
Right.
Like, what?
Exactly.
But there's one more thing in that comment. There's one more thing. There's a statement about taking down Confederate monuments.
Yes.
And how that is erasing history. And that's something that always really bothers me when people say, we can't take down these monuments because that is erasing history. And guess what? We're still going to teach about the Civil War and the Confederacy next semester and the semester after that. It's not erasing history. The number one thing that folks really don't get with that argument is that those statues and monuments, were a lot of them were put up in the 1920s.
Right.
They were put up decades and decades and decades after the Civil War to rebrand the Southern cause as this fight for heritage instead of, you know, racialized slavery. And in the 20s, when a lot of these were put up, you're talking about a time of intense racism, anti-immigrant nativism, the Klan marched in Washington, D.C., you know, the borders were closed to immigrants from all over Asia, and on. And Woodrow Wilson said that Birth of a Nation, D.W. Griffith's
yes.
incredibly racist film, right, was truth in the making, or whatever, however he called it. He watched it at the White House and said it was truthful. So incredible racism in the 1920s, and that's when a lot of these statues and monuments came up. They didn't, like, put them up in 1857 right after the Civil War. They came up decades and decades later when the South was trying to rebrand its cause in the Civil War.
Just a side note on Birth of a Nation. I took a film class years ago at Shasta College. There were some pretty conservative teachers back then. We watched Birth of a Nation, and all they talked about is how great the film was, not how racist it was.
And if we watched that today, Ted Cruz would say that we're trying to make white people look bad, that we're doing reverse racism, that we're operating as bad as the KKK. And Steve Bannon and an organization called ALEX, some people may have heard of that, a conservative think tank, sort of like the Heritage Foundation. They have focused in on critical race theory as a hot issue to use in the upcoming election cycle. And so they're blowing it. They're just blowing it way out of proportion. Critical race theory has never been taught in the K-12 curriculum. But they're not objecting against critical race theory, in my opinion. What they're objecting to is teaching history. The fact that this nation was built on slavery. The fact that this nation included in the Constitution, provisions that called people of color not really human. They were only three-fifths human. The fact that the filibuster was, enacted in order to promote racism. The fact that the slave acts, so it goes on and on and on, and they don't want our kids or our students. You know, that Governor DeSantis down in Florida, but he's now requiring that you have to, if you want to go to college, you have to, you have to register with the state what political party you belong to.
Unbelievable.
So they don't want, it's not about critical race theory. It's about, they want to whitewash and rewrite the history that started with day one here in the United States of America and continues with examples like George Floyd. I consider what happened to George Floyd a modern-day lynching, that the officer, the poor officer, I mean, I sympathize with him to a degree, has bought in with the permission structure that enables law enforcement to kill people of color. Whereas if it's a white person, you don't quite do it. You still do it if you feel like you need to. You don't do it quite as much because the permission structure is provided through institutional racism and systematic racism that continues to exist in our society. And I, granted, I'm a little to the left. But anyway, that's my spin on this. So, Dr. Schwaller, you're the expert on this.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm thankful to live in a state where we just passed a bill to require students in the CSU system to take an ethnic studies course.
Yes.
And I was on the committee at Chico State this last academic year working to decide which courses at Chico State would count for that. So how different it is when you cross state lines. But, yeah, going back to what you're talking about, there were several articles in the Constitution that protected slavery and even funded, militias to fight against slave insurrections. The 1790 Naturalization Act was the first naturalization act in U.S. history, 1790, and it stated that only free white men could be citizens. It goes on and on and on, and I think the biggest challenge is that, you know, this country begins with what's kind of called the American paradox. It's founded as a place that's home to slavery and genocide, but also freedom and opportunity. Right. And a lot of the folks that are getting that freedom and opportunity, even if it's not as much as they think through time, and, you know, maybe they should align with people that are more like them, people of color that are more like them in terms of class, but the folks that have that freedom and opportunity, which are, you know, white folks, view any obtainment of freedom and opportunity from the quote-unquote others, from people of color, as taking it from them. So that they're being attacked and their freedom and opportunity is being taken as historically marginalized communities gain more freedom and opportunities.
Yeah, and by the way, folks, you can call in 605-4567.
There was one line in there that I think you actually mentioned in that piece that we read earlier. I am proud of my heritage and our inclusive American culture, making me a xenophobe. It's like, no, it doesn't make you a xenophobe.
Because what they're saying in that is that there's one American culture, and if you are a hyphenated American, you are being divisive because you're not just an American. So that's a common argument in the right. You know, are you American or are you, you know, hyphenated American and not trying to fit in and blend in and assimilate? But,
And what's scary is fascism needs that. Fascism needs that. It needs to have people start thinking that way. It needs to have people say, well, you know, maybe we do need a voter ID. You know, I mean, because they keep saying there was all this fraud. And so maybe it's a good idea that all these legislators, and I think we're up to, 38? Oh, boy, I don't have that stat in front of me. We're up to about 30 states who are figuring out ways to suppress the vote of people of color. And they're using all this fake flag malarkey to do this, hoping that the rest of America says, well, you know, I don't, you know, maybe you should show, I don't know, you know. So this is where it gets dangerous, and this is where we have to be vigilant, and this is where we have to fight for the right to vote. And I'm done.
If I could add one more thing about critical race theory too, and actually even something before that, what you kind of made me think when you were talking about Ted Cruz is really frustrating when you hear people say, well, the folks who either study or write about or fight against racism in some way, those are the racists because they're the ones that are so focused on racism. They're the racists. And basically, you know, on the Red, White, and Blueprint recent podcast, Podcast 9, which was published yesterday, Carlos and Woody and John kind of said that. I mean, among other things, I mean, Woody also said that we don't need a Juneteenth and because we don't need anything besides the 4th of July. And Carlos said, if you want to make a racist out of me, start doing SHI, you know, what like that, you know, like meaning that if we had Juneteenth, we're going to make him a racist. Now, if you say that, you're probably already a racist,
definitely,
right? But,
definitely.
But, you know, this idea that people that talk about it and you know, push against it, racism, are the racists, is another, you know, right-wing talking point. But critical race theory, right. It really came out of legal scholars and activists in the early 70s. So it's not just the study of race and ethnicity. It specifically emerged from legal studies and in the early 70s. And if anybody's interested in a sort of starting point for a book on critical race theory, I'd recommend The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander. Mm-hmm. The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander. And basically her premise is that throughout different periods of time, African Americans have been oppressed and controlled with particular systems. So it went from slavery to Jim Crow, and now it's am I still here?
Yes.
Oh, yes, you are.
Oh, and now it's mass incarceration. So if you think about it, when you incarcerate people of color, and in a lot of states, when you get out, you can't vote. You probably face employment discrimination. You probably face housing discrimination. You can't serve on juries. And you lose particular rights in the similar ways that African Americans did under slavery and Jim Crow. So let's look at the numbers in terms of the population in prison. 2018, 34% of people in prison were African American. So I'll say that again. 2018, 34% of people in prison were African American. They accounted for only 13% of the U.S. population. So 34% in prison, 13% of the U.S. population. The same year, 2018, 29% of people in prison were white, but they accounted for 60% of the U.S. population. So that is really the textbook definition of systemic racism. And unless you take a racist idea and say, well, there must be something wrong with the African-American community, they must be predisposed to commit more crimes, which is a racist argument.
Right.
So
well, the infamous,
if you don't follow that, then it's systemic racism.
The infamous Charles Murray has a new book out where he does indeed say that again, that blacks are more disposed to crime than whites.
And another book that I highly recommend, Heather Cox Richardson. Heather Cox Richardson. And she has a great blog and a great Facebook page. And a couple of years ago, her book was How the South Won the Civil War.
I just used that in my History 130 class last semester. Great text.
Great text. And, you know, and that's what we're facing, folks. We're facing the critical race theory is being used as a weapon in the new, if you want to call it, civil war, which is being, in my view, promoted by the right in order to grab power for the minority. In other words, they are the minority.
I do think it's important to say that, I mean, despite some of those Republican polls, that I do not believe a majority of the public Republican Party is racist. I don't believe that. I think that this is, you know, it's less than half. And but it's an important half, and it's the powerful half right now, and that's what makes it scary.
That, you know, and that's a really good point, RV, because if you endorse and fully endorse President Trump, who I consider to be a racist and what I call a proto-fascist, it doesn't necessarily make you a racist. However, you're complicit to some degree of perpetuating the big lie.
I agree.
So it's like I do. I do hear a lot of people, a lot of white people, and I'm a white guy. No, I'm not a racist. I'm just not. You know, yet if they look deeply, I think they're going to find that they have been indoctrinated to a point. So explicit, implicit racism, and some of it is conscious, and some of it is not. But anyway, this is what's interesting, Sean, is in this research that I did, close to 50% of Americans really don't know what critical race theory is and really don't have an opinion on it. And in the meantime, critical race theory has been mentioned in Fox News over 18,000 times since March. So...
I would guess that the percentage is even higher. 50% seems pretty generous. I would guess that it's probably a lot higher.
I was being generous.
That don't know. That, yeah.
I was looking for common ground.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay,
listen, we're going to go ahead and take a phone call real quick, and then we got to go to a break. So
let's talk about how we can change the state of affairs when we come back.
There you go. So who do we got on the line?
We have Jimmy on the line.
Jimmy, good morning, sir.
Jimmy!
Hello.
What's up?
The other week, you guys were talking about racism in the militia.
Jimmy, if you can call back. Evidently, we had a problem there in the phone system, so please call back. Because
I can address what Jimmy's talking about.
Well, we got about halfway in there. Listen, Jared, is now a good time to go to the break? Or, you know, while we get Jimmy back on the line there.
Yeah, well, we can go to break.
Let's do that. So, Dr. Schaller, or Sean, hold on for a minute. We're going to go to a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.
expected to be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military.
I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit, my family.
Playing with my daughter, I'd felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right? So I reached out, and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to MakeTheConnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
These are unprecedented times. Challenging how the YMCA works to strengthen community as we have for nearly 170 years. But we've always found ways to help people and communities in times of crisis. Right now, Ys across the country are providing emergency child care, shelter, food programs, and outreach to seniors. But we can't do it alone. Whether you're connected to the Y or have a fond Y memory, we need you to stay with us. Reach out to your local Y today and stay with us for a better us.
Hi, I'm Arielle Winter. If you're anything like me, your pets are not only your best friends, they're part of your family. American Humane, which has been rescuing animals like Cleo here for more than 100 years, has life-saving tips that can make a big difference in a disaster. When disaster strikes, you want to protect your whole family, including your pets. To help keep your family safe and help our best friends in their worst times, find tips at AmericanHumane.org.
I expected to be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military.
I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit, my family.
Playing with my daughter, I'd felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right? So I reached out, and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to MakeTheConnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
And we are back. Right before the break, we had a weird earthquake in the phone line. I don't know what the heck was happening. Marjorie's space laser was hitting us with and disrupting our phones. Jimmy, are you there, sir? If you're there, you got just a few minutes. Get to the point and let's focus in real quick.
Okay. Yeah, the other week you guys were talking about racism in the militia, and you guys said that the militia in Shasta County is racist. Well, a couple weeks ago I was talking to one of the head guys, and he said that his right-hand man is a black guy, an African-American, and there's Latinos also in the militia. So in turn, wouldn't you be calling those people racist also?
All right, Jimmy. First of all, I have to correct you a little bit. We did not say the militia was racist. We said that one of its members had made racist statements. And that's a true and documentable fact.
Okay, I'll have to re-listen to the podcast because I thought it did say it was militia.
It just happens to be one of the prominent members of the militia, and he has made racist statements. In fact, he called a black man a monkey.
All right, I didn't know that.
Would that be racist?
That would be racist.
Okay.
And I will I'll go back and listen to the podcast.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jimmy. Thank you for holding over the break. Sean, do you got any response to that?
Yeah, I didn't hear a lot of it, but I gathered what he was saying based on RV's response. But that same member,
exactly.
Can we name the name?
Sure. Can.
Yeah, Carlos Zapata. He also said yesterday's podcast. He said, "Now we're seeing CRT, critical race theory, that's being taught in schools at a young age. It's white guilt, you know?"
Yep.
And then he proceeds to say, "I'll tell you what, you know, I'm not a white man, but every day I thank my lucky stars, I thank God that white men existed, that settled Western civilization and gave us what we have today." I heard that. I immediately started thinking of Richard Spencer and that sort of racist alt-right community. That's exactly how they talk and speak about, you know, the coming of Western civilization. But back to critical race theory, you know, that's what people are saying. It's guilt. And it's not guilt at all.
Well, it's not intentional guilt. I want to say that if you have a little bit of guilt, look inside you. Ask yourself. I mean, a little bit of, as a clinician, you know, we always say guilt's not good. But hey, if you have a little bit, maybe you're not doing something correctly. Think about that. You know, and the other thing, Ben Carson, You know, he called basically slavery was, well, immigration. They wanted to come to America and find a new life. Yep.
Like when Michelle Bachmann's, you know, years ago, I think that's the name, right? Michelle
yes,
Bachmann.
Yeah, that's her.
She said that the founding fathers worked tirelessly to end slavery in one speech several years ago. And it's like,
nope.
That's not true.
And Carlos, when you are absolutely glad that the white nationalist came and committed genocide and slavery because they built the country that we have today. Now, Carlos.
Right, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, Carlos. Okay, maybe you're not an explicit racist, although calling people monkeys and all that kind of stuff kind of borders on that.
Calling Carlos, a black person a monkey is definitely racist.
What you're doing is you're endorsing white nationalism, which is closely associated with fascism, which is closely associated with a lot of Trumpism, which is closely associated with a lot of what the RWBM proponents are talking about. And so there we go. Sean, you're up.
Yeah, he also said on yesterday's podcast, which he said before, you know, when we used to not get along with people or when we used to have problems, we just run them out of town. Well, that's yeah. Also, he said that again on yesterday's podcast. That has, you can't say he's racist because he said that, but that has racist undertones because of the history of sundown towns, of the history of
exactly.
of African Americans and other people of color being chased out of town or not being able to go to certain towns after the sun went down or being chased out because of their political beliefs or whatever. It's happened a lot throughout U.S. history. So when you say we used to just chase people out of town, I mean, first of all, I want some examples. Like, when did we used to do that? Does he have examples in his imagination of that happening in Shasta County? Like, when did that happen? Is he talking about the Wild West in the 1860s? Like, what is he referring to? Because when we used to do that, I want some examples and evidence.
Yeah.
Yeah, and not only that, Carlos, it's illegal. It is illegal. You know, don't take your guns to town, Carlos. So RV had a great point right before the break, is critical race theory was never taught in K-12 classrooms. However, the history of racism, history of slavery, has been taught. When I was in school, and when I was in junior high school, I had a textbook that showed a picture of the Reconstruction. And the picture was a room full of black legislators, and there were a lot of black legislators during the first part of Reconstruction in the South. And this was in the textbook in Oakland, where I went to school. And the picture was very, very racist. A lot of black legislators, they were drinking, they were playing, looked like playing dice. Yeah, and this is what I was indoctrinated with. This is the, talk about critical race theory. This is what I was indoctrinated. Sean, I think we have a phone call. Is it okay to go to a phone call here real
Great.
Quick? Yep.
We have Randy on the line.
Good morning, Randy.
Randy, are you there?
Yes.
Go ahead, Randy.
Hello. I've never heard of critical race theory until recent times. So I had to bone up on that a little bit myself. But it just, to me, it just kind of is like a formal look at a situation that's taken place. Like in, say, this land here in California, the breadbasket of, a lot of the world, used to be owned by Native American people. And at the same time, when them Native American people were being killed and hunted for bounty, there were people taking over them lands and building their wealth. So is that relevant today for the groups who took over that property and for the surviving Native people who escaped genocide? How has it affected those groups?
It's absolutely relevant, Randy.
And how is that relevant today?
That's
critical race theory.
Yeah, let Dr. Schwaller answer that. He's an expert on that.
Okay.
Topic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hi, Randy. Thanks for calling. Yeah. That's incredibly relevant. I mean, the first thing I would say is, in terms of wealth, okay,
The typical white family has 8 times the wealth of a typical black family, and 5 times the wealth of a typical Hispanic family. So when you talk about wealth and assets, that's what land is, right? So when you take land and you accumulate wealth, that's an intergenerational thing, right? That's passed on through the generations. Like I mentioned last week, where, you know, with the 1862 Homestead Act that gave 200 million plus acres away to basically white men and their families, there are a lot of families today in the United States that trace the accumulation of their initial wealth in the United States to that particular policy. So it's very, very relevant. And then, you know, when you talk about Native Americans through time being grouped together, sometimes even with historical rivals, you know, in terms of, you know, if you look at the example of the U.S. government trying to put the Klamath and the Modoc together on a reservation in northwestern California, and the Klamath didn't want to be there. They went over to back over to their homelands in northeastern California and fought against the U.S. military in the early 1870s for quite a while. But you have peoples today that are still the descendants of those Native Americans that were removed from their lands that are facing all kinds of poverty and problems on homelands that aren't even theirs. In fact, you know, one of the poorest counties in the United States today is Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota, one of the poorest counties, poverty, highest poverty. We're talking about dirt floors, no running water, no sewage, incredible, basically third world poverty. So there's a lot of connections, and especially when you look at wealth and asset accumulation through the years, but also, you know, where people are living today.
Randy, do you got anything else here real quick?
Randy actually hung up.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh. Okay.
Didn't mean to chase him off. Hey, Sean, we talked about something last time that I thought maybe we could go into a little bit here. And I was asking, you know, I said something about for somebody that's not familiar with critical race theory and stuff, accepting the idea of white privilege, like if you're a white person, accepting that is, it can be difficult. And you said, I think just sort of to shorten your answer, is that the cure for that is taking a historical perspective. Looking at history, and so that, do you get what I'm saying? I mean, a little bit?
Yes. Yeah, I said historical perspective and looking at systems to go, you know, everybody's individual experiences are very important and their perspectives and experiences, but when you talk about something like race or, you know, other things as well, you have to look at it from a historical perspective and also look at systems, right? So, you know, it's a systemic thing. And that's, you know, one thing that critical race theorists do, although they focus mostly on laws and, you know, the legal mm-hmm. side of it. But yeah, historical perspective and systemic. What a lot of folks do is they make it individual, they make it about themselves, and they feel attacked and they say, I feel guilty. Instead of doing that, you know, we need to look at it as a bigger societal thing beyond ourselves that's both historical and systemic in the contemporary era.
Right, yeah. So if I feel a little guilt when I hear about my history, what do you think I should do?
Well, I think it's not just guilt. It's also just feeling uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. You know, and I've been there. I've been there, you know, going through school and learning things and getting into this stuff, and sometimes when you're uncomfortable or a little nervous, you know, you can have the biggest breakthroughs and get the best ideas.
Exactly.
And grow the most. Just being, it's not just guilt, it's the idea of being challenged, you know, to think about, you know, society and your position, you know, in it.
So if I'm feeling a little guilty and a little uncomfortable, maybe that's the angel tapping on my shoulder, if you want to call it that, saying, listen, do some research. Maybe you need to get some education. Maybe you need to enroll in a junior college where it's free and learn a little bit about not only the history of the United States of America, but the history of here in Shasta County. And you can do that. And you can also take classes through Shasta College, connected to Chico State. Maybe it's an opportunity to say, listen, because I feel uncomfortable, and because I don't think I want to be associated as a white racist hater, maybe I need to understand and learn a little bit instead of just diving into the tinfoil hat politics and using that as a protection device. You know, when systems are stressed, sometimes that's when change happens. In fact, usually that's when change happens. What we have is an opportunity in America today to facilitate that change. It could go one way, which is not very good, or it could go another way, which might eliminate a lot of problems if we just decide to use cognitive ability, to use fact instead of tinfoil hat politics, and really take a critical look at how we got here. Because if we continue to do what we're doing right now, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over without fixing it. How can we go forward in the way I think a lot of people want without understanding where we're at and how we got there? Isn't that what education is?
Yeah, I think that's exactly correct. And what I would encourage folks to do and is to learn about what happened. Like you mentioned Reconstruction, and you mentioned that sort of racist depiction of African Americans in your textbook. That was the same image that was put out by literature that was against the Freedmen's Bureau, you know, that was helping African Americans during Reconstruction, helping former enslaved peoples, you know, get an education and get back together with their families because the families have broken up and doing all sorts of things. And the folks basically on the right in the South, you know, put out these cartoons of African Americans depicting them as lazy, just sitting there as white folks are doing the work. Very much speaks to Birth of a Nation, the 1910s. But that image that you mentioned in your textbook was there, you know, during Reconstruction to sort of make African Americans look bad. But what happened during Reconstruction? What happened in the early 20th century? What happened in the 1930s? You know, the United States government rounded up hundreds of thousands of people of Mexican descent, mostly citizens, and deported them in the 1930s. Roosevelt signed off on that. Of course, you have the Japanese internment as well. But after World War II, what happens when, you know, all the white folks are moving to the suburbs that are all but off limits to people of color that cannot rent or buy properties in those suburban neighborhoods that are being funded with federal loan dollars?
That's right.
That
That's
gets up into the 50s and 60s. What happens in the 70s? What happens in the 80s with, you know, and 90s with the criminalization increase in the criminalization of black and brown folks and the filling up of jails and Prop 184 mm-hmm. in 1994, the Three Strikes Initiative.
Right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
so go beyond slavery, you know, go into the late 19th, go into the 20th century and see how a lot of these things, you know, connect to larger themes in terms of racialized oppression and white privilege. And, you know, it kind of comes up to the present.
Sean, have you been following very much the discussion that's going on with critical race theory in corporate America in the workplace?
Not really.
It's interesting. There's been some pretty big backlash. If you're not familiar with it, I guess we can't discuss it too much. A writer that's been writing about it is Matt Taibbi. And where the rules are sort of being applied. How did he put it? The people are being purged because they're not conforming to what the new corporate dictates are. And but I guess we might have to save that story for another time.
Matt TV is such a great writer, incredible. And so, you know, this. So here we go. We started the program sort of with a local Facebook poster who's a part of the BLM, not BLM, the Red, White, and Blue Movement Recall. And I went to her Facebook page, and you know what? It's just basically off the hook. But there was one thing that she led off with her last post, which was very important. And she said, listen, don't retaliate. Do not get violent. I'm paraphrasing. Do not get violent against, you know, this person that so-called allegedly attacked me. Do not get violent. And, you know, we're not mentioning this person's name, but I'm going to say thank you. do not get violent. Let's tone down this you know, violent revolution crap, and let's figure out a way to talk with one another. And if we can't do that, I don't know what else to do. We got a few minutes left, Sean. Anything you want to focus in on, or RV you want to focus in on?
Well, I could say, you know, I wanted to also say something about, speaking of nonviolence, a little, you know, weak segue, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., right? Who hasn't heard, I can go into a classroom with 50 students and say, you know, what do you know about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., or raise your hand if you've heard the I Have a Dream speech or know of it, and they all raise their hands because they've all heard of it or heard it, maybe not heard all of it. But, you know, that got him, right, well, not that, but everything he had done, got him Time Man of the Year in 1964. Time Man of the Year. So you have to be really popular in white America to get Time Man of the Year. And he got that in 1964. He was alive for how many more years, right? A couple more years, four more years. And he got a lot more radical, and that's the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. that nobody knows, that at least not a lot of folks know, aren't familiar with. Mm-hmm. And that's, I don't know what I was going to say, that's important because, you know, in terms of what he said after 64, we'd have to cancel him too in terms mm-hmm. of what these folks that are against critical race theory want to cancel. You know, there's been five states that have actually passed legislation to do this. If you look at that and what they're saying, you'd have to cancel Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. too, because even in that I Have a Dream speech, he was intensely critical of white America and absolutely. What was going on. And then and afterwards talking about systemic racism and how racism was really entrenched in the United States. But right-wingers take that, they co-opt that sort of colorblind thing he says in the speech, and they use it to their advantage to say, well, he wanted us to be colorblind, yet he said we weren't there yet. That was the point. Right. Maybe we could get there someday, but we weren't there yet.
You hear that argument all the time now. What happened to the contact of my character?
Listen, we got 2 minutes, so let's go ahead and bring it home. Go ahead, RV.
Well, that was just for you to take a look at, Sean, is I recalled a little bit more. Matt Taibbi, you know who that writer is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did a book review of White Fragility, and which is a very popular book last year, or maybe 2018, actually. And it's pretty scathing. And so you should take a look at it. It's interesting for discussion later.
You know, we're gonna put these books up on the Common Ground Facebook page so folks can go to it and take a look. And Sean, you can also post on that any critical reading material that you think is important. And once again, Sean, we thank you so much for joining us. This needs to be a 2-3-hour, 4-hour program. And we are working on a way to do that. Sean, thank you so much. I really, really...
Thank you, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yep,
yeah.
Thanks, Sean.
And we're going to do this again. So, folks, there you go. We are going to be backing out until next Saturday. RV?
Stay cool.
Yes, sir. All right, till then.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.